on Sports. Steen here. We're bringing your sports your way every day right here on 101.3 1700 The Champ, real sports talk for real sports fans. You can check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports and at 1700 The Champ, and Facebook's at 1700 The Champ as well. For the one day this week, we do not have sports coming up today, but tomorrow we have Vikings Eagles, huge game. We have Twins White Sox on Friday. Saturday we have LSU Mississippi State, UNI Idaho State. The UNI game's a 4 o'clock pregame, and then we have Sunday we have Chiefs and Jags, Jets and Cowboys, Dolphins, Patriots. Monday, Saints, Panthers, Browns, Steelers. All kinds of stuff coming up, and looking forward to that coming up this weekend. So, trying to think where. Oh, there it is. Had to find my paper. As always, we want to thank Northwest Bank, Woodman Controls, Heritage Building Maintenance, and Broadlawns Medical Center for being a part of the show. I appreciate everything that they do. Just a fix on the schedule here. I am off tomorrow and Friday. Come back in next week. We'll be going full bore with everything that's going on. It just keeps getting next. Tuesday is Twins and Reds. So the sports keep on coming and all the fun stuff that's out there. So still kind of coming down from the Aaron Rodgers injury, Achilles. Once again, I don't know how many more times I can take seeing that injury. It was so bad. You could see it rolling back up into its calf. I feel horrible for the Jets. I feel horrible for Aaron Rodgers. I am one of those that I am very curious to see the 3 or 4 months that Aaron Rodgers was in-house. How much did he help? How much did he help Zach Wilson? I think something had to rub off. I mean, it is not, it's never easy, you know, in the NFL. I go back to this again. I have the standings up here, and I'm looking at this, and the Jets are 1-0, and you know, good for them. Defensive coordinator. So the first one that I pull up doesn't fit my narrative. Miami Dolphins are 1-0. That's an offensive coach. The Buffalo Bills are 0-1. The New England Patriots are 0-1, two defensive head coaches. Cleveland Browns, Kevin Stefanski is an offensive coach. They're 1-0. The Baltimore Ravens, John Harbaugh is just a coach. I mean, that's a defensive-led kind of squad. The Bengals are 0-1. There's an offensive guy. Mike Tomlin's the same. Pittsburgh's 0-1. Mike Tomlin is just a coach. I don't think specifically he's out there. The Jacksonville Jaguars are the only one in the AFC South that has a win. Offensive coach, the Indianapolis Colts offensive coach, Houston Texans defensive coach, but a coach. I give the Texans kind of a little bit of a reprieve there because he's also a great leader of young men and D'Amico Ryans, and that's what they need. They have a young team, and he needs to build a whole team. I'm not picking on that one. Tennessee Titans, not Mike Vrabel's fault. That's just not a very good team. The Raiders are 1-0, the only ones in the AFC West, but they have an offensive coach. The Chargers are 0-1, defensive coach. The Broncos are 0-1, and they shouldn't be, but that's an offensive coach, and the Chiefs are as well. The Cowboys have an offensive coach. They're 1-0. The Commanders have a defensive coach, but has Eric Bieniemy there, so I think you have to cut that a little bit of a slack. The Eagles, more offensive coach than not, and the Giants just had a horrible games against the Cowboys. Packers offensive coach, the Detroit Lions just a coach. The Chicago Bears are 0-1, defensive coach. Minnesota Vikings, once again, did not play well. Have an offensive coach that there was no offensive consistency there at all. So you can see what I mean. Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, they're both 1-0, offensive minded coaches. The Seahawks are a defensive coach. Arizona Cardinals are not trying to win. The Falcons, the Tampa Bay Bucks defense, New Orleans Saints are 1-0 defense, but with a really good offensive coordinator. The Panthers are young. Same with the Texans and the Atlanta Falcons. So, I feel for some of these young quarterbacks, and people are talking in the NFL about some teams that are really struggling, and two of the bigger ones, and they have two quarterbacks that should be successful in this league, Justin Fields and Justin Herbert. And they're on defensive squads, and I don't know what to say about those two teams. I mean, those are two teams that people are expecting a lot from. And if I'm the Chargers, I don't know how much longer I can take. You have Justin Herbert for another year. He's already going to, I mean, he's the highest paid football player. I don't know what you're going to do. You're wasting a top player in the league. You know, I think those two teams, what was expected from those two teams, the Chicago Bears, and I understand you're playing the Green Bay Packers. You're playing them at home. Jordan Love, nobody really knows what Jordan Love is going to be. And I think everybody understood that the Packers had, I think they had question marks on defense last year. And their defense came out and played amazing, or it was just ineptitude from the Chicago Bears with Matt Eberflus. And that's the part of Ryan Pace I can't, general manager, Chicago Bears, that's the part that I don't understand about him. You have Justin Fields. You need to develop a quarterback, and you bring in a defensive coordinator from the Indianapolis Colts. I don't understand that. It makes no sense to me. It has to be, no matter what, the focus of the defense or the head coach is to win football games. And this is not, and I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. We won a Super Bowl because of our defense. The Chicago Bears, way back, won a Super Bowl because of their defense. Pittsburgh Steelers won Super Bowls because of their defense. There's a lot of teams that have done that. But this isn't that time frame anymore. This is an offensive league. And if you don't believe that, then look at the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, their defenses aren't horrible, but they're not great. Miami Dolphins. Look what Tua can do. Look what Mike McDaniels can do. Now, they need their defense to do things. I get that, right? They have to be able to compete. But you still... You cannot win in the NFL if you cannot score. And the other big topic, if you were listening to sports talk radio today, and it has to be a big topic. I mean, the biggest topic is Aaron Rodgers. I get that. The second biggest topic is what's happened to Josh Allen in the last 2 years. If you saw his press conference, you saw a person who is, he's beside himself. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't understand what he's doing wrong. He doesn't get any of that. And I don't know how to help him. I want to help him because I think Josh Allen's a great kid. But man, is he struggling. And it gets to a point, how much longer does Coach McDermott get to keep going? You have to win big games. You have to win games you're supposed to win. And I don't know if they can do that. I really don't. I do not trust the Buffalo Bills to do things. And you have, I mean, you have a division that you should be just every year expecting to win. Because until the Miami Dolphins get 15, 16, 17 games from Tua, I don't know how you go out on a limb and you trust what they can do. I don't think Bill Belichick has a team. Now, they played better in the second half, but they still couldn't pull out a game and win a game. And the New York Jets do not have a quarterback. And then for all the folks, too, and it would have been a great story, and Aaron Rodgers was doing everything humanly possible to be Aaron Rodgers and to help this young team more than he had in the last 4 years playing with the Green Bay Packers. He was a team leader. He understood what his role was. The toughest injury to come back in any sport is having an Achilles. Rarely do you have people that come back anywhere near what they have been. Anywhere near. And he's 40 years old. At 40 years old, you don't even know from a normal game, how well you're going to be when you come back into the offices on a Monday and see how long it takes you to get to be fine by Friday. And from everything that everybody has said about Aaron Rodgers, he was in the best shape of his life. He was in the best mental state of his life. And something above and beyond his control happened. And what do you do? It's incredibly, it's sad. And I don't know what you can expect from 40 to almost 41-year-old coming back from Achilles injury. There's been people come back from Achilles injuries and go through. They named some people. Dan Marino did it much younger. He was 32 years old when it happened to him. There was another one that they said, a quarterback again today, in his early 30s that had it happen and lasted a couple more years. He's 40 years old. I don't know if that is something that you can just mark down on a piece of paper and say, you know what, he's going to come back from that and we're going to be fine. I don't think that's going to happen. A lot of things. So when you come out of a big week in the NFL, you can start piecing together some things. And I love to go through these. They give a lot of top tens out here. Top 10 NFL edge rushers. Nick Bosa is number one. I thought Nick Bosa had a pretty good game. Micah Parsons is number two. He should be number one. He wrecked havoc on the Giants. Once again, my take on the Giants, somebody missed it yesterday, that was pouring down torrential rain. You're on the road. You have a great first drive. You have a bad snap. You have a field goal blocked and returned for a touchdown. Once again, you're a visitor. You're on the road, and it's pouring down rain. You have a couple of more things that happen. That's not who the New York Giants are. I don't think it's who Dak Prescott is. I don't know if it's who the Dallas Cowboys are. That was a opening home game. Myles Garrett was three. Great game by him. TJ Watt, four. Struggled a little bit. But I think that has more to do with San Francisco and the way they run their offense than it had anything to do with TJ Watt. Max Crosby's five. I think he's probably a little low. Hassan Reddick from the Eagles. Brian Burns from Carolina. Matthew Judon from the Ravens, Alex Highsmith is with the Steelers as well, and Daniel Hunter for the Vikings. When you start to look at the NFL, quarterback play, defensive line play, offensive play, wide receivers, and can you run the football for 3 or 4 yards every 4 downs. I think those are the 5 things that makes you a really good football team in the NFL. And if you go through this list, once again, you have probably six or seven teams in the AFC and you have three teams in the NFC, and that's it. If you're going off some of these tells, and it's really funny how you have to stack up and you have to look at this stuff. It's really strange how the NFL season, I think a lot of people think out of 32 teams, if you have 8-8, or if you have 10-10 even, you have 20 teams out of the 32 teams. I mean, that I think that gives you a really outstanding NFL. There is not, if you're trying to get to that, there is not that many teams in the NFC that you can just sit here and go, yeah, I'm extremely happy about how this is working out for me. I mean, you really have to bring in some. I mean, you have to bring in teams like the Washington Commanders. Now, looking at the NFC North, I think the Packers and the Lions, I'm good with that. So there's the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Packers, the Lions. I have no idea with Atlanta, Tampa Bay, New Orleans, and Carolina. I don't think any of them stack up. I think San Francisco is good. I thought Seattle was going to be good. Maybe the Rams are going to be good. I don't know. We have a lot more of this coming up. I have Randy Wehofer's coming in at 5 o'clock. We're going to talk baseball the 5 o'clock hour. Once again, you're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3, 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans. Be back right after this break. Wednesday. Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day. Right here on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans. The one day this week we do not have a live sporting event on after my show. So you get to take a breath today. Thursday, we have Vikings, Eagles, Twins, White Sox on Friday. Saturday, LSU, Mississippi State, UNI, Idaho State. Sunday, we have Chiefs, Jags, Joined in Progress, Jets, Cowboys, Dolphins, Patriots. Monday is Saints, Panthers, and Joined in Progress. We have Browns, Steelers, two games on Monday. And next Tuesday, Joined in Progress is going to be the Minnesota Twins and the Cincinnati Reds. Once again, I have a rosé soirée for Broadlawns Medical Center tomorrow night and have a fundraiser with Diva Roofing on Friday. So I will be back in here on Monday. This segment is going to be brought to you by Northwest Bank. Commitment that you can bank on, taking care of your personal, business, mortgage, agriculture, private banking, wealth management, insurance needs every day your way. Locations in West Des Moines, two in Ankeny, one in Ames, three locations in Omaha, and many across the northwest side of the state. Check out Northwest Bank's mobile app, ease of doing banking whenever your phone is in your hand. Go to NW Bank to take advantage of applying online for various types of loans, from a vehicle loan to a mortgage. It all starts there. On the website, you can visit the newsroom for all things Northwest Bank, or you can view the BizBuzz blog for their business insight, or simply use the multiple banking tools to enhance your banking experience. All this at NW.bank. Once again, don't wait and open up an account with Northwest Bank. Remember that you can count on member FDIC. Okay, this is, I enjoy this one. This came from David Eichholt today. This is one I totally agree with David Eichholt. Official response. So the Big Ten Conference today, they asked Nico Reganey on the interception if it was pass interference, and Nico was quite adamant that it was. And the Big Ten Conference today announced that Iowa wide receiver Nico Reganey had been issued a public reprimand for violating the Big Ten sportsmanship policy. They very strongly give him a public reprimand. Who cares? Nico, don't worry. Probably don't want to do that again because it is something your coaching staff does not like. So don't. But were you wrong in doing it? No. No. I don't think so at all. Getting back to, so this is just a little bit of a continuation of the Josh Allen talk. Do I think that Josh Allen is a top five quarterback in this league? I think he has the ability to be a top five quarterback in this league. What's the difference? Right now, here's the difference. He had a quarterback whisperer in his ear. It was Brian Daboll. he understood in a game or in a situation which Josh Allen he had on the field. Because he has some ebb and flows how he plays quarterback. Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, now it's going to come to me here in a second, but his offensive coordinator now, who went to the Chicago Bears and now is back with the Chiefs, I think he understands it as well. There's an ebb and flow to Patrick Mahomes. There's some things you have to let Patrick Mahomes do. He's going to do it no matter what you do, so you have to try to work that into your system. That's what Josh Allen is missing. Second thing he's missing is using your head to think about the next play or anything else instead of using it as a ramming thing. That's a quick way to get yourself hurt and not be playing in football games. And the Buffalo Bills are not a good football team if they do not have Josh Allen behind center. The third is that you have to have somebody who can consistently catch a ball. If you double team Stephon and he has to go to other receivers, they can get open and they can do those things, but they don't always catch the ball. And that puts undue pressure back on Josh Allen. And I think that's an issue right now. But one of the big things, and it was on Pro Football Talk, and it was the same thing that I said yesterday, and like they came out with this overnight last night. It is, he needs someone to be in his head to help him. Most quarterbacks do. There's a select few. Kurt Warner was one. Tom Brady was one. Drew Brees was one. Terry Bradshaw was one. The more you got in their head or more that you tried to restrict things going through their head, the worse they became. Patrick Mahomes is that way. And he's earned the respect from the team, his offense, and his coaches to be able to do that. Here's one that might surprise you, might surprise my partner in crime, Scott. I think Tua has that. Tua's only problem is he's not real big. He doesn't have, I mean, he. It's not just about being able to take a hit. He just needs to learn that you can't, because he's not Josh Allen. And Josh Allen can't take hits. He took more hits in that game the other night than he can afford to take for the rest of the year, because it's not going to happen. And I'm still saying, is as good as Josh Allen is, it's not even close to being the worst of all of this. The worst of all of this is Justin Herbert. The coaching that he's getting is abysmal. I mean, they're taking a 400-yard passing guy who might be the best QB talent-wise, throwing-wise, in the NFL, and they're regulating him down to being the 7th, 8th, and 9th best quarterback in the NFL. That's coaching. I mean, you have some others as well. I believe that Kenny Pickett has a really good shot at being a really good quarterback. He's got to get more help from play calling and for people. I don't know what you can do to help that. I mean anybody out there understands that Mike Tomlin is an amazing coach. He just doesn't have losing seasons. He doesn't have Ben Roethlisberger back there. He has Kenny Pickett. I think Kenny Pickett is going to be a great football player. But he's not Ben Roethlisberger. He can't be the face of that offense yet. You got to run the football. You have to have passes that he feels comfortable in. And I don't think he's there yet. I mean, right now, these were some quarterback power rankings that were out there this week. I can't even go through that. This gentleman, and I like him. I follow him. He had Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes. None of that was Patrick Mahomes' fault. I mean, when you have 8 passes that are dropped on, and every one of those passes that were dropped touched the wide receiver's hands, and positive yards, first downs, you can't blame that. He had Josh Allen as number 2. There's no way. They had Lamar Jackson as number 3. There's no way. They had Justin Herbert, number 4. No way. Joe Burrow, number 5. No way. They have Trevor Lawrence at 6. At least Trevor Lawrence won a football game. I mean, Lamar Jackson won a football game. He didn't have anything to do, and that's one. So let me pick on my Baltimore Ravens for a second. I brought somebody in, if I'm the Baltimore Ravens, to enhance Lamar Jackson's passing ability, to spread the offense out, to get the offense down the field, to help with the running game, and to help with his running game. He might be the best running quarterback that we've ever seen in the NFL. And Todd Moulton nothing. It looked exactly the same. I mean, things like that have to change if you're a Baltimore Ravens fan, which I am. There is talent on the Baltimore Ravens. You still have to scheme to get Lamar Jackson to be what Lamar Jackson needs to be. And the simple fact that this particular person had Brock Purdy at number 23, and they have him at 23, so here's the exact opposite of that, is when people that rank quarterbacks put either they're putting all of the chips on the shoulder, or they're putting all the chips on the shoulder of the coach or the offensive coordinator. It's a combination of both. You can't love Kyle Shanahan's play calling and then say, well, that's the only reason that Brock Purdy is good at what he does. Brock Purdy's good at what he does because it doesn't take him very long to take the snap, identify where he needs to go with the ball, and go that way. Problems with Josh Allen, holds the ball too long. Problems with Justin Herbert at times, holds the ball too long. That is something that the greats didn't do. Peyton Manning didn't do that. Kurt Warner didn't do that. Tom Brady didn't do that. Drew Brees didn't do that. Ben Roethlisberger didn't do it early in his career, probably did it way too much in his latter part of the career. And the reason that he maybe didn't get to play as long as he should have is because of he just couldn't stay healthy because he was taking too many hits because he held onto the ball too long. Matthew Stafford gets rid of the ball very quickly. What's some of the things that people have concerns about Dak Prescott? Holds onto the ball too much. Joe Burrow does not hold onto the ball too much. He wants to extend plays. I think Lamar Jackson's good at that. I think Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen, just once again, I have to state this because it's scaring the heck out of me. Josh Allen can't take that many hits. I mean, he is not Lamar Jackson. And Lamar Jackson does not take hits. Lamar Jackson goes out of bounds or he goes down. And I'm Kirk Cousins. I think he's a serviceable quarterback, but I think when you put too much emphasis on him, his I don't like his thought process. Mac Jones, I think Mac Jones is way more talented than what the New England Patriots or what people around the league understand, because I think he's hamstrung by where he is. I mean, there's just, if you're looking, and I've said this all along, if Tua is healthy, the Miami Dolphins are going to be tough to beat because of just how well Mike McDaniels can run that offense. I think that's the same with Trevor Lawrence. He has to stay healthy. His weapons have to stay healthy. And if those happen, everything will be better. And I think that is what everybody is looking for, is they're looking for a way to make sure that happens with Trevor Lawrence. I think when you take a look at him at 6'6", with that arm strength and his ability to maneuver, not just take off and run, but with his ability to maneuver around to get an extra second to throw with his arm, it's going to be amazing. And I think Jalen Hurts, and I think that was here's my thought process on Jalen Hurts. I think it was first game jitters of not having who you had in your head last year. They had a great connection. And now his person that he had a great connection with is trying to help Anthony Richardson. And so he has to learn that again. I didn't think that Jalen Hurts played poorly. I just think that I think that he didn't have that same kind of coexistent with who's calling plays. And I'm trying to say, Jared Goff, there's one that we really need to talk about. Because I think with his weapons, and I think that's what is going to be close for him on what's really going to push him is the weaponry that he has. He just has to understand that he cannot force things, that he has a talented enough offense. He has a coach that believes in him. He just needs to be patient. He's in a division that's all you need. You need to be patient. You can win the NFC North if you're patient. That's all he's looking for, patience. And I think that'll come. I just, you know, when I'm looking at some of the most important ones, Dak Prescott is there. For my buddy T, right? I don't know what to tell you about Dak Prescott because I've seen him be great. And I've seen him that you almost have to bench him because he looks lost. And I don't know how you can do that. But, you know, you look at this list. There's 32 of them. There's only 10 of them that I think has the capability of winning a Super Bowl. And 7 of them are in the AFC. That is the crazy part of all of this. And that is what, when you look at what happened to the Jets with Aaron Rodgers, that would have been one more, and it's now gone. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 1700 The Champ, 101.3 Real Sports. Welcome back in, everybody. Once again, happy Wednesday. Last segment of this first hour on Wednesday. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans. You can check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports and at 1700 The Champ. No sports today. Vikings Eagles tomorrow on the radio. Broadlawns Medical Center. Couple of things. Rosé, soirée, a celebration. With Broadlawns Medical Center, the wife and I get to go to tomorrow. Can't wait. The medical clinic by Drake University, right on the east side of Walgreens and just down the street from Drake University. It's an amazing clinic. Real job. I manage some Unity Point clinics, and we have amazing clinics. This is second to none. The building is beautiful. I'm trying to think. You walk in, and it's exactly what you want when you're walking into a clinic. You need calmness because you're not calm if you're going somewhere, if you're going to the doctor or you're going to get checked up or any of those things. Or if you have one of the specialties, mental health, it blew my mind. I couldn't stop staring at things. I couldn't stop celebrating with them. It was that good. Very, very special, and very special for us to be a part of the Broadlawns community, and I love the fact that we are. Okay, this is a very interesting thing. I totally agree with this. There'll probably be a ton of people who do not. the NBA came out with another stricter policy on players not playing in games, maybe on a travel, where you came back from a travel day or whatever. There are specific players now that you can't have. Some teams only have one. Some teams have more than one. But if you have more than one of them sitting, you're going to be fined by the league, and the fines are not small. And I found this really interesting. So DeJounte Murray and Trae Young for the Hawks. Ben Simmons from the Nets. Ben Simmons hasn't played in the league for 2 years. I don't think anybody cares about that one. The Boston Celtics, that one's easy. The Boston Celtics is Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. LaMelo Ball with the Hornets makes sense. DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine with the Bulls. Donovan Mitchell and Jarrett Allen and Darius Garland with the Cavaliers. Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. Nikolai Jokic, I can't believe that Murray's not on there. The Golden State, Stephon Curry, Draymond Green, Chris Paul, Andrew Wiggins. Fred VanVleet for the Rockets, I thought that was interesting. Tyrese Halliburton. This is a big one, and we also had NBA ratings today, too. So for Tyrese Halliburton in the ratings, I think he was, I'm going to tell you here really, really quick. He was in the 30s, and I even thought that might be a little low, but he is moving up in these rankings. He was 23 in the NBA. The NBA ranked their top 50. He was 23 in this. He's one of the players for the Indiana Pacers, he's the only player on the Indiana Pacers that they will be fined for if he's sitting in some of these games. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard just didn't play. I LeBron James and Anthony Davis, Jaren Jackson, Ja Morant, Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler, Giannis and Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, Mike Conley, Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert, and Carl Anthony Towns, Zion Williamson, Julius Randle. I'm glad that the NBA has done this. And I call it the Kale Rule. It's my nephew. We go to Minnesota. We like the Timberwolves. We really do. But we like to go see the Timberwolves when they're playing certain teams because we want to see certain players. Every time we go up there to see a certain player, he doesn't play because it's either a back-to-back or a travel day, and they're just not there. And there's been times where three or four or five players, I mean, we go to see the Golden State Warriors. I think we went three times, and none of them played. I mean, we might as well have stayed in town and watched the Wolves at Wells Fargo. And it is it's frustrating. And I hope that I hope this helps, because I think the NBA needed to do something, and I'm glad they did. It's been a sticking point for me for quite some time, and I guess the other part of this that I wanted to talk about today is, you know, I heard a lot of talk about the Olympic team and, you know, what it needed and how it was coached and all of that. And one of the things that somebody went out and the one thing that they showed of Tyrese Halliburton on that last game was he got juked out on a three-pointer and slipped on the floor. And it was like, well, see, that's why Tyrese Halliburton shouldn't be playing. The fact that Jalen Brunson played over Tyrese Halliburton at any point in time in these games was almost, it shouldn't have happened. They were so much better when he was on the floor because he has the one thing that hardly anybody else on that team had. He was pass first, defense second, and oh yeah, if you need me to score, I'll score. And I understand when you're playing for your NBA team that, you know, there's rules and there's guys and you have that. When you're playing on an all-star team against teams that actually play like a team, and you're trying to do a bunch of one-on-one and go through your legs and dunk and do all, nobody cares. Nobody cares how many times you dunk a ball in these games. All I care about is you win. That's what I want to see. I want to see you win, you know, win another championship in the international part of basketball. We are basketball. The reason the international teams are so good is because of us. But when we go into these games, we don't know how to play as a team. So their answer is, well, we're going to bring Anthony Davis, and we're going to bring Jimmy Butler, and we're going to bring all these guys. It doesn't help. That's not what our issue was. The issue is, what can we do to get the right cohesiveness in a group of young men who can play as a team and win? Do we need to have three bigs? No. We need to have people that can shoot the ball. We have to have people that can defend the ball. And we have to have people that are willing to give up the ball to somebody who's hot or who's not hot. That's where we're at in the international. The reason that the Joker and Luka Doncic and all these guys are so good is because they get joy in scoring. They get joy in defending, not Luka, maybe not the Joker either, but they enjoy passing and giving the ability to have your teammate be there as well. Tyrese Haliburton is that guy for this team. You know, and what I thought, because I get it, if you take Devin Booker and you take Steph and you take LeBron and you take Anthony Davis and you take Joel Embiid, you have to have a big. Joel Embiid's still not going to be able to. I mean, if I'm the Philadelphia 76ers with his history and his body, I don't want him playing extra games. But you need a big. I'd take Chet Holmgren as one of the bigs to run the floor. And you know who I want to see play together? Tyrese Haliburton and Steph Curry. Because Steph Curry doesn't have to do it all. He doesn't have to be the main dribbler, the main passer, and the shooter. And, oh my gosh, the shot clock's going down. I got to get there. Because the one thing that I don't think that you can do in these type of games is I don't think you're going to be able to manhandle teams. LeBron's not going to be able to run over people. They're going to knock him down and make him shoot free throws. I don't know if Anthony Davis, I like the Anthony Davis part of this. I like Bam in the part of this because you need somebody that you can just leave in the middle of the lane and keep people away from getting easy shots. We got beat in a lot of those games that we got beat in because we couldn't shoot the three-pointer well enough, and we couldn't defend the three-pointer well enough. And then when we did take a little bit more time and effort to defend the three-pointer, we let them drive by, and we had no presence underneath the basket. That hurts. I mean, it's just not. It doesn't make it easy for these groupings to be able to overcome something like that. You just can't be that guy anymore and just say, hey, everybody looks up to us and we are going to be the leader when we play internationally. It's not going to happen. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3, 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. Randy Wehofer coming in here. We have a lot to talk about in the baseball world. That's why I haven't said. Welcome back in, everybody. Once again, happy Wednesday. We're having a fun day. I got Randy Wehofer walking in my door. That makes me happy. He's going to sit down here in just a second. You can sit in either seat, any seat you would like, Randy. You are listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ. Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. As always, you can check us out on Twitter at 1700 The Champ and at Steen on Sports. Facebook's at 1700 The Champ as well. No sports on the radio today except for me live. But coming up this weekend, Friday, we have Twins White Sox. Saturday, we have LSU Mississippi State, UNI Idaho State, Chiefs, Jags, Jets, Cowboys, Dolphins, Patriots, Monday night, Saints, Panthers, and Brown Steelers. So that's a lot. So we have all that going on. And now I have Randy Wehofer in here. He is the, it's been a couple of weeks, so He's the VP and assistant general manager of the Iowa Cubs. Most important thing, your daughter's moved, happy, and ready to go.
Yeah, we're all set.
Oh, and it'd be nice if there's the engineer in me. Hi, Randy.
Hi, how are you?
We're having a day. I don't have a screen, so it makes things interesting. So I just have to just feel when things are coming.
Use the force.
I have the force, and it's working. So everything worked out okay.
Yeah.
Happy.
Everything went well.
Last homestand, is that correct?
Correct.
Everything going well?
So far, so good. We won today.
Big time.
Weather looks good the rest of the week, so we're excited for having these final few home games. Unfortunately, we hit that little bit of a losing streak and fell off from being in contention to make the playoffs. That wouldn't have meant any extra home games, but it would have been a nice thing for the organization. But we're still moving guys to Chicago to help in that playoff run, which is our primary responsibility. So we're looking forward to these last few games. Crowds the last 2 days have been really good, and we're looking forward to a great weekend.
And a perfect weekend of weather. I mean, this is the Iowa weather that we hope and pray we can get like 2 months worth. We never do, but it has just been gorgeous. So it's got to be great for you guys.
Yeah, I think last week, I don't say this with any sour grapes or anything, but the energy and attention that Iowa State Week takes up,
it's a lot.
It is a lot, and for good reason. It is where people's heartstrings and passions and education dollars have been spent and are being spent, and all those kinds of things. And this is new for us. It's only been a couple of seasons where we're past Labor Day and later into football season. So this week sets up much better. We're kind of back. Things are settled back in after that that game, particularly being just right up the road in Ames, and we're off to a good start. And we've got lots of fun stuff planned for Fan Appreciation Weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're giving away lots of great stuff. We're going to give away a Caitlin Clark bobblehead each of the three games.
There you go.
Autographed baseballs from all the key Cubs that have come through town, and a couple of others: Justin Steele, Christopher Morrell, Marcus Stroman, Seiya Suzuki, all to give away. When you download the digital program, we've got lucky seats that we'll call. We'll do some giveaways on our social media pages. So we've got lots of great stuff to give away as part of Fan Appreciation Weekend.
So one of the things you said that you have individuals that are moving up, moving down. The one that everybody's texting me, and you see his mom, and it's Crow Armstrong. And just help us remember, I mean, this is a young kid, very, very young. The experience that he's going to get just to see major league pitching for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, it's interesting to make this move in the middle of the playoff race. I think it was strategic based on being at Coors Field this week and his defensive ability.
And
he showed that off immediately. There has never been question that he is a high-level major league outfielder and has been for a couple of seasons.
He made it.
The major league,
amazing play.
The major league audience got to see the play he made going in the right center field gap yesterday. Was pretty incredible. Plays up against the wall are becoming more and more common. Guys practice that now, but that ground to cover, not many stadiums even have that much ground to cover. In order to be able to do that, so that was pretty impressive. But
he's barely street legal. He's 21. I mean, that is crazy, but this is a good thing for him.
Yeah, they did pinch hit for him with the bases loaded today, and so that's going to be the thing, right? Is it's nice to say that you want to get him this experience, but you're also in the middle of a pennant chase. You don't sacrifice giving a guy experience and starting his clock unless you think that he's got things that he can offer for you to be a better team because of that. But it is, he is by all accounts, a terrific hitter too. He got off to his first week with us. I think he was probably pressing. I think there was an adjustment period, and he didn't really hit much that first week as an Iowa Cub. And then the team went to Omaha, and he ran into his first Triple A home run. And then he's hit really well for the last 3 weeks, and he hit a pair of grand slams within a series, you know, and so now all of a sudden he's thrust into the limelight, and you know he can't pick out a piece of bubble gum in the dugout without a camera being on him right now, which is really interesting for a team that has the players on it that it has, and it has
stars everywhere.
Yeah, and it's in the position that it's in. This is not, you know, a team that's 40 games under 500 and trying to sell you the future. This is a win now kind of environment. You didn't move on from Bellinger and Stroman at the deadline and all the other things. So I hope he does well for his sake and for the Cubs' sake, because there's a lot at stake.
What I'm looking, even in a push for the playoffs, what I look for him, especially for a team that has some players they need to keep healthy, a little bit older players, his ability to pinch run and then get you a couple of innings of defense for what he does, because as he has to be good on the bases to be that quick that he made a couple of those plays in the outfield. He has to be. Now maybe he doesn't understand it completely yet at 21 years old. I mean, seriously, 21 years old, you're a junior in college anymore. So, but that gives, just to have a defensive presence in the outfield in the latter innings has to help the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, well, but you consider that Hap's a Gold Glove winner, Bellinger's a Gold Glove winner. You know, I think the injury to Candelario here in the short term moves Bellinger into first base and needs an opportunity for him to contribute there. It's not like Tauchman's terrible. You know, Mike Tauchman is a big reason why the Cubs have turned things around, but he's not a future piece in the grand scheme of things necessarily. But it is, you know, it will be revisionist history as to whether this served its purpose or not, because if you're going to pinch hit for him in the eighth inning, you're going to take two more weeks of at-bats away from him just to play a couple of innings of defense and a run.
That's true.
You know, they brought up Canario on September 1st, and he pitch hit once in 2 weeks and was sent back until Candelario got hurt, and then he's got called back up. And he's a darn good prospect in his own right as well. He's not the defensive center fielder, but he's got probably more offensive punch potential than Pete. So, and then how much does David Ross trust his own job to young kids? And, you know, he's going to be judged pretty strongly on these last couple of weeks and trying to hold this playoff spot. So, you know, there's a lot at play here. There's all of a sudden a little bit of a soap opera for the Chicago Cubs, and it's going to be good baseball to watch and good drama to watch too with the moves that they've made.
And right now, you know, how things are shaking up, everybody in that division over the last 10 games is either 6-4 or 5-5. And you're, I would assume, in major league scheduling, a lot of the schedule as you end with these last 21, 22, 23 games is going to be at least interdivisional, if not really in just the Milwaukee Brewers, the Cubs, the Reds, the Pirates, and the Cardinals are going to play each other. Is that not how it works anymore?
The Cubs schedule, they're headed to Arizona, and then Colorado comes back, and I know they've got the Pirates, but with the new balance schedule, you don't get as many games in your division, and
that might be the only thing that I'm is disparaging about the way that it's always nice at the end of the year that you were playing somebody that even if you were off a little bit, that you could come back and say, okay, I've got a home, I got an away, we can make up some ground here. It's harder to do if you're not playing each other.
I think that last week is within the division, and I'm going to have to call it up in order. It's Milwaukee, the final three games on the road. It's Atlanta and Milwaukee that last week. So the only division games that the Cubs have left are three with the Pirates and three with Milwaukee.
Wow. And you kind of hope that, you know, where I guess maybe not Milwaukee, but you're kind of hoping the Braves maybe are resting people.
Well, just lost two out of three to the Rockies, who are terrible. Right. So, you know, I think every day is super important, but no one day can, you know, don't let one bad day turn into three.
Right.
You know, I think that's kind of the secret of the pennant race is how much pressure can you apply without crushing your clubhouse? Because this is a growth process for this team, because it hasn't gone through it in its current makeup like this in several years.
Where they were 2 months ago to where they are right now, or maybe 2.5 months ago, enough, and I know we just talked about Coach Ross, but is that enough for him to keep his job, or do you think he needs to make this playoff?
I don't think it's his job's in question for 2024 by any means. I think they extended him, in fact. But how you do in a pennant race as opposed to how you raise young players as opposed to how you win with a veteran team, you know, that for all the success that Joe Maddon had, the knock on him was he could get you there, but he doesn't keep you there. And
right.
And there's all, you know, there's always somebody looking to put something in the minus column for you, even if you've got six things already stacked up in the plus column. I'm not so, maybe I said that poorly before. I don't think it's his job that's at stake, but his trust from the fan base and how right. he handles this last couple of weeks, I think it's somewhat concerning that all of your high leverage relievers need a week on the disabled list in September when you're in a pennant race, and a reflection of how you may have used them over the course of the season to get here, you know, and he doesn't know until he gets there, and having the first opportunity in his career to make these decisions of with this kind of magnitude. So it's not about being fired necessarily, but it is about drawing confidence from your team and the fan base and probably the front office to a certain extent. I don't think his relationship with Jed Hoyer is in any sort of danger based on the long history that they have. He's built that credibility, or he wouldn't be in that chair at all. But at some point, you know, public pressure matters in some of these situations. So, you know, he feels some pressure, I'm sure, to perform in this situation. And I think from my perspective, I don't even see what the Brewers are doing every day. Every day I look to see if the Cubs won.
Right.
And then I look to see if the Diamondbacks and the Marlins and the Giants won or lost. I'm watching the 2.5 game lead that they have, not the 2.5 games that they're chasing. Because I think it's more important for this team just to get into the tournament any which way that they can of postseason play and let the chips fall where they may and gain that experience. And maybe, you know, maybe this is the first taste. Maybe you're a year ahead of schedule. Maybe this is the year that, you know, they won the wild card against the Pirates and then lost. You know, there's lots of great teams that have got there, experience it, get a little further before you kind of finish off that journey. So I think it's more important just that they make the playoffs than they catch the Brewers. So I've spent most of my time
seeing everybody,
seeing
else.
What's happening below rather than worrying about who they're chasing.
And one of the things that I look at a lot when I go through standings in that is, you know, I look at streaks, but the big thing I look at, because I enjoy that, is the last 10. And every single team except for two in the National League are either 5-5, 6-4, or 4-6. So no one in the National League is like, hey, I'm going to take this, because you go up and you look. The Baltimore Orioles are 8-2. The Tampa Bay Rays are 7-3. You know, they're out there trying to put away something, but no one's. I mean, the Braves don't have to. I understand that they can rest people. But the other thing is, probably about a month ago, month and a half, maybe it hadn't even been that long, for the trade deadline, you're like, you know, the Chicago Cubs are in a really interesting spot because they do have the ability that they could get rid of some players. You were adamant that Stroman, no way, you can't do that. And even to a certain extent on Bellinger, going, does that help the clubhouse, you know, losing a guy like that? And they didn't, and it seems like it worked. That doesn't happen all the time. Was that blind luck, or they really sat down and said, you know what, I think we're better than what we thought we were?
Well, I think they've been saying that all season. I think one of the things that modern-day general managers look at that I don't very much, but I've started to now because I know it matters to them, is that run differential number.
Right.
And the Cubs have had a really good run differential number all season. And they, you know, and Jed Hoyer, the interview opportunities that he did have, trying to pay attention to what he's saying and what he's not saying, is that when they were 10 games under 500, their interior metrics said that they should have been a 500 club. They didn't say that they were a great club, but they should have been a 500 club. They were, you know, so some of the luck element of baseball, they felt like their record underperformed based on the way guys were actually playing and the way some of that comes together. So hearing some of those nuggets made me think that there was a little bit of optimism there, that this club is better than we're showing if we can just get it turned around right. And then Bellinger turned into MVP Cody Bellinger starting in June.
And still is
to a great degree. Now, you know, some people can say that I missed the boat on Stroman because of his injuries, and he, you know, so did the injury make him decline after the All-Star break. He's not been the same pitcher since the All-Star break, which is a short sample from the All-Star break to the trade deadline. But, you know, I'm not super close to it. I'm going more on reputation there than on anything else, that I don't see a guy to come up and be that. And Jordan Wicks has come up and been more than I ever expected he could be. We didn't even see him at that time. He like Pecro Armstrong, was only with us about a month and spent most of his time at AA. And what he's gone up and contributed in Stroman's absence, and the way Steele is, looks like the MVP, they've been able to, and Hendricks has been normal since getting healthy. So all the elements were there. Who's done it or not, maybe is a little bit of a coin flip.
I'm like a kid in a candy store having Randy in here. You're listening to Steen on Sports. You're listening to us on 101.3, 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for really happy Wednesday. Second segment of this second hour. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3, 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans. You can check us out on Twitter at 1700 The Champ and at Steen on Sports. Facebook at 1700 The Champ as well. Tomorrow night we get Twins, White Sox, Twins and the Guardians fighting. Twins have the upper hand right now, so that's kind of where we're at. This segment is going to be brought to you by Woodman Controls. Woodman Controls Company is Iowa's intelligent building solution company. Provides designs, engineers, installs programs and services, HVAC, lighting, card access, camera controls. They can fully automate your building and improve efficiency, comfort, and security. Located in Ankeny, Iowa, go to WoodmanControls.com and find out more about an outstanding automation machinery manufacturing company. Okay, so we are in, it's September 13th. You had your Windy City Wednesday today. You have Mug Club and Fairway 2-for-1 tomorrow night.
Day game tomorrow.
Day game, 12:08.
Yeah, so if you bring a fairway receipt, you get two reserve tickets or general admission tickets for the price of one. That's any Thursday. And then tomorrow's the last day to get a free beer for the Mug Club members as part of that.
And then you have Friday night, you have fireworks, which was always fun. Saturday you have, it's a 6:08 game. You have pregame catch on the field, social Saturday. And then Sunday is your typical Sunday, 1:08. Kids run bases, food pantry, kids club, bike to the ballpark, family fun, and fan appreciation.
Yeah, and really it's kind of fan appreciation day is always the last day of the home season, but we're really kind of treating this as fan appreciation weekend. As I mentioned last segment, we're going to, through the digital program, through our social media channels, and through just some lucky seat locations, we're going to be giving away lots of great stuff. A Caitlin Clark bobblehead every game. So if you missed the chance to get in on that, come this weekend, download the digital program, enter to win. We'll draw something pretty much every inning of all three games through those different things. We've got autographed baseballs from Kyle Hendricks and Justin Steele and Marcus Stroman and Seiya Suzuki, Pecro Armstrong, Matt Mervis, you know, all the big names that have come through town this year as part of the Iowa Cubs and the Chicago Cubs. And we've got some hats to give away, and we've got some really cool our team card sets. We'll give away some of the regular team card sets, but then they also sent us a set of the cards blown up to be like 9x8x10s. We got Jared Young and Jonathan Perlaza and Darius Hill that have signed those, and we'll be giving those away. So they're really, really cool pieces. So
St. Paul Saints, Minnesota Twins
affiliate. Yeah.
So get a nice little border war going on there. That's kind of cool.
And they're in first place. They've got some of their top picks, and you know, between the Twins are in a similar position as the Cubs, fighting to, you know, be ready for the postseason. The Twins in that AL Central have been on top and
hanging on.
You know, Cleveland will give them a little bit of a push here and keep it interesting till the end. So it's two major league clubs in similar positions and two really good AAA teams at the top of our division. You know, that one losing streak pushed us back a little bit. We've got too much ground to make up we might be able to catch St. Paul if we played really well, but we wouldn't catch Durham and the teams on the other side. So that's going to be an all-Eastern International League playoff this year.
After your last home game, and as it moves, you know, we get into postseason or whatever, how quickly at the end of the baseball season do you guys sit down and go over what went right, what went wrong?
Pretty quickly. Our focus this year is getting right into construction, so that'll be the first thought. You know, we will finish about 3:30 on Sunday afternoon with the last home game. The team will leave for the airport and go to Louisville for the final series sometime Monday afternoon. But first thing Monday morning, the construction crews are taking lockers out of the clubhouses to protect those and starting to take walls down, taking the decking off the veranda top outside the Betfred Sports Lounge, because all that needs to be done to protect underneath and fixed. And at 8 o'clock Monday morning is going to be right into it to make sure we have every minute, hour, second available to be ready, because the 24 schedule's out, and Tuesday, April 2nd is the first home game, and we start with 3 in Omaha March 30th through that first weekend before we come home. So it will be here quickly, especially when you're in the middle of trying to renovate everything out in that left field clubhouse center on both sides, visiting and home side. So we're going to get right into that, and then we will kind of recap and I'll work on some of the numbers and the reporting and try to quantify some things, and we met today with our stadium operations staff and prioritized some projects that we want to do for the fall and what we want to think about for the spring, and then promotionally we'll get right into it and review, you know, how things went. And it's never too soon to start booking Marvel characters and all the things that we did that we can pretty well count on that we'll be doing again next year.
So infrastructure to start with, and then the upgrades you're making are upgrades that Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball has said this has to be done.
Yeah, it's part of the two-phase, you know, process that we got some of that done this year, but the outfield wall will be replaced more permanently. We're still dealing with the chain link out there. You don't know it from the stands, but that fencing
on the back.
Yeah, on the backside, because it fell down during that derecho-like storm last summer. And, you know, we just, you know, when the batter's eye went up, but because we're in the floodplain, there's lots of special considerations for how that wall gets rebuilt permanently due to codes and all those things. And we work closely with the city of Des Moines and to get all of that taken care of. But there's no time to waste to not knowing what winter may bring and how soon it may get here to make sure that we...
That's the scary part.
How soon is it going to get here? Off pace.
That you work in conjunction with the city of Des Moines. So road construction that went along for, which you guys, by the way, did an awesome job at not even, many people don't even realize it, but is that something that they're going to complete that before the start of next season, or are they doing another side, or do you know things like that?
The last update, what we got, that once the season ends, that sewer water separation project actually has to cut through the north parking lot. So they're going to start cutting into the north lot to connect all that up to whatever the connectivity needs to be. Because there was the work that was done on the MLK Bridge and the infrastructure that went under was all part of that a couple of years ago. So now that needs to connect. And all of this down MLK leads to the water treatment center on Floor. And that's this. All of this project is connected, and last we heard they are pacing well, they've even started to cover things up and have the sewer buried over on the west side of MLK.
And if we don't find any more ancient burial grounds somewhere.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, and so second has been closed, and I think, you know, they aim to finish that up here in the next couple of weeks, and then third will be closed, but I think that will be after the season.
So as you start towards the end of this season and starting next season, when you look at the schedule, how the schedule is everybody pretty happy about how the schedule works out, you know, with the games at home and then your games on the road, and it's pretty set?
Yeah, I think you know, next year's schedule, we're a little heavier in May and less in, you know, this year's schedule, we only had 10 home games in May and I think 18 in June, and it's kind of opposite this year. We miss Father's Day being at home, which is kind of a bummer. That's always a great day, for the ballpark. But 4th of July sets up much better. We'll be home the 4th, 5th, and 6th, and a Thursday, Friday, Saturday against Omaha. So we'll get the firework, the holiday fireworks on the 4th. And then that leads into a Friday, Saturday, rather than coming off the long weekend the way we had this year. So that sets up a little bit better. And then, you know, all of that seems really great until you know when it's going to rain. You know,
very often right now. But as early baseball season, it seems to be a lot more.
Yeah, certainly, you know, you look at key things and you know, you don't have to be 25 years in a minor league baseball or 40 years like Sam to know that Friday nights are better than Tuesdays. you know, so you look at some key factors and most of that balances out pretty well. But, you know, we don't have any say. We get the schedule and then it's time to go to work to make the best of it. And, you know, with the 6-game series, you know, that everything balances out amongst the team. So you get a little bit lucky with the weather. You know, we don't have any new opponents coming in. You know, Memphis does come in again, so that's always good to make sure we play the Cardinals affiliate. It's not a great travel schedule for the road games, which isn't of worry to most people listening to this. So, you know, but those are always the things that we kind of look at.
Entertainment wise, is that something you're already thinking about? You already have scheduled. You just don't bring it out yet, or is it still something a work in progress?
We just got the schedule first of the month. I mean, we got it. Yeah. So we will begin into that here quickly. Game times are not official. We've submitted what we want game times to be, and we don't expect any big departures from, you know, what we've established. I don't see any reason why Major League Baseball wouldn't allow us to keep that same formula, but with, you know, Wednesdays being day games and, you know, Tuesday's always going to be an evening because it's the first day of the series and you can't start too early when the other team is traveling. We'll do a handful of Thursday early games when school's in session to give more opportunities for school groups to come out. Fridays will always be night games for fireworks. The 6 o'clock Saturday we think has worked really well the last couple of years. We'll stick with that. Sundays will always be at 1. We'll probably do we've submitted some 3 o'clock Saturdays in April and try to steal some sunshine and some degrees of warmth. You know, we tried that this year and too soon to tell. You know, the people who showed up said they really liked it. Well, of course, the people who show up are going to tell you that they liked it. It did give us some flexibility to get a game in that we probably would have lost had it started later. You know, so if you want to start at 3 and you don't start till 4:30 because the weather stinks, you can have that flexibility. If the weather's good at 3 but the game doesn't start till 6 and then it gets really cold or really nasty, then you've lost it and you've got to go to a doubleheader. So, you know, I don't expect any big departures, you know, and we'll get started with groups and things too, you know, and knowing those kinds of things, you know, we're not going to surprise anybody with a Friday afternoon game. That's for sure.
Wednesday afternoon games, as a whole, if you take out weather, what you thought they were going to be in attendance and that, I know they were. I mean, just by driving by while I'm working, it seems like it's a really good, I think it's great because it's a set time. People know that. I love that part about it. So that's the good thing about that extended schedule.
Yeah, you know, today was downtown workforce day at the ballpark, and there was close to 1,000 tickets out from the partnership and the downtown chamber worked together to talk with businesses to all come out, and they've done this the last 2 years on the last day. And that's just kind of a culmination of the support that we get from the downtown business community, in addition to the metro at large, but particularly downtown. It provides a great team-building opportunity. We do lots of picnics and lots of skybox rentals and lots of Bud Club tables and Betfred tables and all those things for those Wednesday afternoon day games. We had one school from Okoboji there today and took advantage of a nice day early in the school season to come out. You know, and that's why we do it. It provides a good opportunity for the team, the trainers were just telling me the other day that they love, you know, to have a night game after a day game in the middle of the series is almost like a full day of recovery. for the athletes and the players. So, you know, you come off the off day on Monday, you play the night game and the day game, then you get a lot of recovery before you get into the weekend. So the Cubs like the way that sets up. It breaks up the monotony of the six straight games against the same team from a baseball standpoint, for the married players and for the staff to be home for dinner one evening on a weeknight makes all the difference in the world. You know, as work-life balance is more in focus and top of mind in all walks of life. So it works really well. If nobody ever came to day games, we wouldn't play them. You know, but the community has embraced those. The Cubs have embraced those. And by way of that, we have a successful way to sell tickets and fill up the ballpark.
I was catching a few of those innings today and had a water main break at one of my properties. Oh. So had to miss, but I had a couple of my buddies that went in my place and they were enjoying themselves. So they were sending me pictures. So those day games are so much fun. So we got about 20 seconds here in this second one. I just want to kind of lead in. So I have some Major League Baseball questions too, leading into the playoffs and some of the teams and some of the moves and things that happen and some of the teams, what they have to look forward to next year with not having the type of seasons that they thought they were going to have. So I get to pick your brain a little bit about baseball because that's what I love to do because I love your answers. Just with the younger kids, just one more quick one before we go, and I'll tease this one out there. You know, how many of the kids that we've been watching down here by the end of the year will be able to go up for a while just to see. I don't remember what the rules are, so we'll talk about that when we come back and talk about a few of these teams and what we have to look forward to. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3, every day right here on 101.3 and 1700, the Champ Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. You can check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports and at 1700 The Champ. Facebook at 1700 The Champ. Twins White Sox happens tomorrow at 6. I will be out Thursday, Friday, be back in here on Monday with football and baseball and all that going on. I want to thank Heritage Building Maintenance, Northwest Bank, Woodman Controls, and Broadlawns Medical Center for being a part of the show. Once again, you have tomorrow's Thursday. You have a 12:08 tomorrow. You have a 7:08 on Friday with fireworks. Saturday, pregame catch on the field, social Saturday. It's a 6:08, and Sunday, the last game of the home season.
Home season, yeah.
1:08, kids run bases, food pantry, kids club, bike to the ballpark, family fun, and family fun pack, and fan appreciation.
Yeah, we've got all of our usual stuff. You know, the last celebration, those Sunday specials where you bring three non-perishable items for the DMARC food pantry. You get a free general admission ticket. The bike to the ballpark is a beer and a ticket to the game for $15 when you ride your bike to the game and go to the bike gate, the Bike World Bike Gate. The family fun pack is it starts at four tickets, but you can buy as many as you need, four and above, depending on the size of your family. But it includes tickets, hot dogs, and drinks for everybody at a special bundled price. That's become really popular over the course of this season. It's really taken a huge step forward in terms of the number of people taking advantage of that, and that's great. That's why we offer those kinds of things. And then certainly kids getting to run the bases is a fun way to finish the year. You know, last year of the season, the last home game, Jared Young hit a walk-off home run to win the last game of the year, and we ran the bases, and it was a lot of fun and left you wanting more for April. So we're looking at a terrific weather forecast for the rest of the weekend.
Absolutely.
And a lot of fun to be had, and we're going to give away lots of great stuff, Caitlin Clark bobbleheads, autographed stuff from some of the key Cubs, and lots of other great things throughout all the games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for Fan Appreciation Weekend. And ask us about seats that are available for 2024 season tickets. We've already started looking ahead with the schedule out. Those are available. We've started renewing with those who have been with us, some for a very long time, and certainly an opportunity to add more is what we'll be working on this offseason.
There you go. Good win today, 4-3.
Yeah, we got really good pitching from Nick Neidert today, and the bullpen. You know, the pitching has gotten thin with Jordan Wicks getting called up. Caleb Killian was up. We were playing six out of every 7 days with two starting pitchers. I had a scout tell me once, it's really hard for one pitcher to give up 9 runs in a game. It's really easy for 6 pitchers to give up 12. And so when you get to a point in the season when you're having relievers start and you're just looking to piecemeal things together, and this isn't just the Cubs, the Toby Gardenhire, the Saints manager, told me the same thing. You know, every AAA team's kind of in that point, because if your major league team, if you've got a guy who's pitching well, the major league team's going to take him. And they're managing pitch counts and innings limits and workload for guys throughout the year that some of the younger guys maybe shut down by now or limited by now. You know, Ben Brown, one of the top pitching prospects for the Cubs, was hurt for a little bit, and now he's working 2 innings at a time out of the bullpen rather than starting. Because he's pitched more innings this year than he ever has in his career, and try to extend that again a little bit more next year. So it's a challenge for managers and pitching coaches to figure out how you're going to cover those 9 innings all the time based on the pitch limits that the front office gives you. And that's why you end up with some high scoring games or some, you know, the results are maybe unpredictable at this level, but that's part of the development process and just a fact of life for all the AAA teams. It's the same for everybody. It's like blaming it for being too cold. It's cold for the same team, for
exactly.
Both teams. Every team's dealing with that.
And that's the last part of the thing. You're the Chicago Cubs AAA affiliate. That's the part. So we're here to enhance the people that are here, but we're here to make the Chicago Cubs better. And sometimes I think when people get, because iCubs fans, I have friends that are more iCubs fans than they are Chicago Cubs fans. And they're like, well, they took another one of our players. That's their job. That's what they're supposed to be doing, getting these guys ready to go up. And that's exciting. And you had one of the young studs got to go up, and you have a couple more. So that just makes it more and more exciting. One of the things I wanted to ask you is it better for baseball or not better for baseball that the Baltimore Orioles and maybe the Tampa Bay Rays are ahead in the East and the Boston Red Sox and the Yankees aren't making the playoffs? Is that better for baseball, or is that just throwing, you know, gasoline on a fire? It's not, you know, it's not better. It's just whoever's playing well, people will go to. Or do you think it's these people want, man, I want the Yankees and the Red Sox to be good?
Yeah, I think it's a generational thing. I think if you're a Yankee fan and you're our age and older, you're not leaving baseball anytime soon,
no.
Whether your team's in first place or last place. So I think for the younger generation, that's the highlight generation and the video game generation, when teams like Baltimore have young stars that they've brought up and, you know, the Adley Rutschmans of the world, it's good for them to have success, because those are probably the guys that are really good in MLB The Show, and probably the guys that, you know, are probably more adept at some of the social media stuff and that are featured in those ways. And as long as it's bringing younger people to the game, we can complain about our team till the cows come home. We've probably gotten to the point where that's our team. And we're going to go. And you know, my high school friends that I have a group chat with are all White Sox fans, and they could not complain more on a daily basis, but they're still paying attention. And some of them are even still going to games with their kids every now and again, and texting how few people are there with them when they show up. So, sometimes the negative, sometimes there's no such thing as bad publicity.
I agree when it comes to
some of that stuff, and particularly when it's just about winning and losing. Certainly you want to avoid some of the other stuff, but when your team's just bad, there's always next year.
Yeah, and that's the way baseball's been since I was watching in 1970. It's all, or listening more like in 1970. It's always been that way. One of the things I was thinking, because so social media, it's big in baseball too. And my friend group, we are like old time baseball guys. And So when my kids are talking about De La Cruz from the Reds and some of these young kids, and I think they're finally winning me over because I'm like, well, you know, he's just – I like their enthusiasm. I like how that kid plays baseball. Is he a great baseball player yet? No. But, man, if I had to go, can I let him grow a little bit? I mean, he – that young man does things, and Cubs have a couple of these guys too. He does things that just aren't normal. I mean, how fast – I mean, a hit – between the right fielder and the center fielder that gets to the wall, and before they can pick it up and throw a ball, he's sliding into third. It's been a long time since you've had players like the athletes. So I guess where I'm heading is athletes are starting to go back to baseball again. It's not all the athletes are playing football or playing basketball. They're going back to baseball again because, man, are there some athletic young men out there playing well.
Yeah, and I think over the course of my time in minor league baseball, there have always been those athletes, and they never got out of single A and double A because they didn't polish quickly enough, and there is a willingness amongst the new wave of general managers and owners that are willing to take some of the warts that come with great athleticism, and we value potential much more than we do the finished product more than ever before. And so there's a couple of factors there. Have I ever told you the story about Corey Jenkins?
Mm-mm.
Corey Jenkins was a first round pick of the Boston Red Sox in 1995. Never got out of A ball after 3 years, couldn't hit a curveball, and ended up going to the White Sox. And he was on the team in Burlington my first year in 1999. And if you ever wanted to start a baseball uniform company, he'd be the guy that you put on the cover modeling your uniforms. He was just phenomenal athlete, in terrific shape, great, nice kid, articulate, good, you know, just a good guy, but he couldn't hit a curveball. And somewhere in May of that first season, we're in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and the coaches are taking forever coming out after a game, and which was unusual. And when they finally come out, you know, what's going on? We just had to release Corey Jenkins. And so Corey Jenkins then was from South Carolina. Lou Holtz was the coach at South Carolina. It was a big-time football recruit coming out of high school, too. Lou Holtz got him into Garden State Community College in Kansas to reestablish grades, spent there 2 years, went to South Carolina, was their quarterback, and led them to a New Year's Day bowl game after not playing football for 5 years, ended up in the NFL playing linebacker and safety on special teams with the Bears and the Dolphins. And I say that, those guys have always been around. No one had the patience to let them become great baseball players.
And to let them fail so they could achieve. Randy, it is always a pleasure to have you in here. Thanks again for being here. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here at 101.3, 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. I will see you on Monday, everybody. Have a good weekend.